And to start this evening, Olesa Zdorevska is a performer, composer and curator from Kyiv in Ukraine. She moved to Ireland in 2011. Her work takes in jazz, Afro-Caribbean, contemporary classical and traditional Ukrainian and Sephardic music, theatre and film. Freedom Letters is her latest project, taking place this Friday evening at the Model Gallery in Sligo as part of this year's Cardia Art Festival. Through music and poetry, it tells the story of two remarkable women, Countess Markovic and Valeria O'Connor-Vilinska, and their involvement in the struggle for independence in Ireland and in Ukraine in the early 20th century. Ukrainian and Irish poets, Luby Yamchuk and Mary Branley, have written the libretto for a series of imagined letters between the women, and musicians on the night include Salyug Nichanawain, Emer Mayock, Kate Ellis, and Olesa herself will be singing. Delighted that Olesa is with me in studio here in Dublin, while Mary Branley joins us from Sligo. You are the director and I suppose the person whose brainchild this whole project is, Olesa. Where did it start out for you? What was the starting point?
Thanks, Sean, and I'm delighted to be here. And I will answer this question straight away. But the first thing I want to say is, and apologize, it's quite hard. It's a hard time for us today. It was the funeral of a good friend and an amazing writer and human rights activist, Victoria Melina, who came to Dublin a number of times over last year, and she was a close friend, and she died in the missile shelling in Kramatorsk, which happened on the 27th, and she died on Saturday. She was deadly injured. I'm attributing this piece to her. I'm heartbroken, and yet I'm finding strength to talk, because she was all about we need to talk and witness, and our witnessing must come with the responsibility to ensure justice. And from this word, I can start answering your question, because justice was something that I was sort of researching. I was interested in that period 100 years back, and thank God we have people that write these brilliant articles that kind of reconfirm and find the legacy of women back in the day, sitting in the archives and find this evidence that they also were part of history.
Yes.
And so I found the one about the suffragists of the time from Ukraine, and I found the surname, which was like, oh, this is Irish, O'Connor, but Vilinska, she has this stuff. So I started digging up. There was not much information. She was a playwright. And then I see this, that kind of put the puzzle together for me, this bit of information that was, she was the first woman appointed to the Ukrainian government in 1917, when we sort of gained independence in Ukraine at the time, but we couldn't sustain it just like Ireland did, but we didn't, unfortunately. And okay, I keep thinking, oh, Markovic has this Ukrainian surname, Polish husband who owned land in Ukraine, and I actually have been in that small village. There's no sign of his, the house, the mansion that he had there. But I was like struck by this, and I tried to find evidence if they kind of talked to each other at the time, any correspondence, and of course the archival, it's quite hard to find such evidence anyway.
By the way, why does she have, where does the O'Connor bit come from in her
name? Well, she just had
name?
A father who was doing business in Ukraine at the time, and so she just had an Irish father who lived and worked there, and therefore I was like, okay, there's no evidence of their correspondence, they kind of same age, and they kind of play the same role. Maybe it's a piece. And I thought, okay, let's have these imaginary letters, and I will commission two poets, because obviously I don't work with words, I work with sounds and music, and I'm a composer. So I commissioned two people that I trusted and I knew will do their best at this,
So the idea is that they're an imagined set. There was no real correspondence between them. Well,
I couldn't find any. That.
But these are imagined letters. And let me bring in Mary Branley and that. As Olesa was explaining to us there, Mary, it is extraordinary that these two women, very much of an age, the Irish connection and the Ukrainian connection, if you like, in reverse, in some ways, mirror images of each other. But the big thing that really struck me, as Olesa was explaining there, was this, the first woman in the Ukrainian parliament. Of course, Countess Markovic, very similar situation for us here in Ireland.
Absolutely. And these were huge achievements for women at the time. So certainly Countess Markovic was first woman appointed to Westminster. And the year before, Valinsko O'Connor had been elected to the Rada.
In Ukraine, which was the parliament at that time in that part of the world. You have a kind of a direct connection to Markovic as well, in terms of your own location and Markovic and a house in that upper in and around Lissadel.
That's right. My house is was actually built by the Gore Boots, the landlords here, in 1903 to be the dispensary for the local tenants to come. So the doctor, the nurse, the dentist came during that time, and actually right up until the 80s, and when it was run by the health centre. So I suppose I'm the first person to live in this house.
Yeah,
but it's on the Gore Booth estate.
Is there a feeling of Countess Markovic around the place?
Well, there is. I mean, honestly, if you close your eyes, you could imagine maybe she's passing the gate on her white horse or something like that. Yeah, this place hasn't changed all that much in 100 years.
Have you visited, Alessa? Have you visited Sligo? Have you been to visit that part of the world?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. And that's, in fact, how I met Mary, because my partner did a big project, tribute to Dermot Healy, Fool's Errand, setting of the Fool's Errand in Sligo. And Mary was one part of that project. And I get to know her work, and I get to know that she actually is an expert on Markovic herself, because she did a play in 1995. Is that right, Mary?
That's right, yeah.
And I knew before that this is the right person. And I work with Luba. She's an expert of that period in Ukrainian history. And I admire their work so much. So I was very confident. So when I commissioned them, and here's a good and important mention, that Markovic Award, which I got, which is a huge surprise and it's a big deal and a huge honor, could facilitate this happening and could facilitate the research. And I wish it was in times where the war last year disrupted all of my work, and it was really hard to go back to any sort of normality. And it's still very surreal to be here at the radio and hearing all these little adverts and hearing people speaking with happy voices. But that's what we should do. That's what I'm trying to do. It's just a survival mode, because it's actually not in the news what's happening in Ukraine and what's my family experiencing there, my parents and my sister's family and my cousins that are in the army and my friends that are dying. And, you know, it's just this reality we're dealing with. So I suppose in the piece itself, this, all these echoes of the history that oddly repeats again, we hear. Today I was rehearsing one of the numbers of the piece with one of the poets reading, and I couldn't hold the tears, because I felt like, oh, this is about now.
This is
about today. And what we did, we translated the Ukrainian part, Ukrainian letters that read in Ukrainian, and they will be projected on the screen, so the audience will connect through this visual part, because everything was... The text will appear there. There's some archival footage, photographs that I found from both places. So I think it will be quite immersive and informative experience for the audiences who will join us on Friday. And I'm really looking forward to that. Yet I won't lie to you, I find it very challenging to just keep the emotional part of me together.
Particularly today, given the death of your friend, the funeral of your friend today, it cannot be easy to be even sitting here speaking to us. But Mary, to go to the structure of the piece, and it's kind of four acts isn't quite the right way to put it, but there are four sections in terms of these imagined letters between the character of Countess Markovic, the person of Countess Markovic, and Valeria O'Connor Vilinska. Lockout, rising, prison, and then the final section, War of Independence and Civil War. These are specific moments or turning points in the life of Countess Markovic?
Well, certainly it all kicked off with the lockout. Markovic had been an activist, involved in so many different political strands at the time, you know, the suffragette, the workers' rights, the this, the that, the other. I think the lockout brought a clarity to just what they were up against at the time to try and win something for workers' rights. So that was a shock, I think, for all of them. The baton charge by the police, etc., people killed, so many injured. Markovic herself actually was beaten up that day. So I think that fixed her mind just how threatened the authorities were by this mass movement. that Connolly had started and Larkin.
And you make your way then through Rising Prison and the War of Independence.
Yes, so it immediately, yes, because immediately they said, we've got to get our own army. So they're really into the militancy at that point. And they were planning the Rising. And of course, Markovitch was training the Fianna boys throughout gun running, etc. So it was, you know, she was heavily involved for years. Yeah. And then it was Connolly who appointed her then into the Irish Citizen Army to have her own command with Mallon at the College at Stephen's Green in the College of Surgeons. And no just, other woman had a command, I don't think.
Yeah. And just to try to draw some parallels, I mean, particularly in those opening sections, I guess, in Rising and in the forming of an army, were there parallels with O'Connor Wilinska in that case?
Yeah, exactly. And this is what we're trying to show. When I was curating, I had to, because the amount of amazing material we could work with and these parallels and just that history and so much to talk about it. But, so it's about the history of both of our places, kind of chronological way, trying to see those parallels. Mm. It's about the women themselves and their lives, actually, personal lives and what they were dealing with. So it has a lot of layers, and every Ukrainian part is sort of, which is interspersed, every letters that come one through another and through songs that we sang also in the piece. And the I can't play you any music yet. The world premiere was happened on Friday, and with the musicians there, we'll be playing it publicly for the very first time. But there are some a cappella pieces, and there's a lot in it. So I would
there's a lot of music. Some of the letters will be read over music and that type of thing. So there is.
Oh yeah. Music serves sort of as it's not an opera and it's not a theater. Yeah. There's no acting in it. There's narrators who are the voices of these women who are the authors of this text piece.
Yes. Yeah, but before we started, you did sing us a song which has a wonderfully, I must say, there's huge emotional feeling of it, a huge sadness within us. What is the song, and maybe tell us where it fits into the piece?
So basically, it's a song from that period, which is an equivalent of the Dark Horse, if you know the Liam Weldon's Dark Horse on the Wind, which Salag will be singing, and the melody is hauntingly similar. So when I put these two songs together, we sing it in the canon simultaneously. So she sings the
Salag
verse from
the
Irish, that song. I'm singing the verse from Do You Hear Me, Brother, which was kind of an anthem of Ukrainian rebellion, of our citizen army. And then we sing them together, and you can hear that this is one thing. We can hear that we both of our nations went through the same story.
You might sing a little bit of the Ukrainian song for us right now. And just this is from that period, is it?
So it's from
that 1920s period.
Yeah, a little bit even earlier than that, 1917 till 1921. So the lyrics were written a bit earlier and the music followed. And then it's considered like a folk song, but actually it has two composers, the composer and the author of the lyrics. Do you want to hear it?
Yes, if you ever could hear some of it now. Thanks.
Чуєш, брате мій, товаришу мій, відлітають сірим шнуром журавлі у вирі, кличуть кру-кру-кру.
Wonderful sadness within the body of that song,
and I can see the cranes that are flying and flying and flying.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. What is it? Could you give me a rough translation of what the lyrics are?
Hear me? Do you hear the brother? All these cranes that are flying away, and they calling us.
Crying as they leave.
Crying as they leave, they're calling us, and where are they going? Yeah. And so this path is all blurred in my eyes, but I have to keep going.
You know, in some ways, Mary, as I listen to that and Olesa's translation of it, there's a sense of the wild geese and the cry of the wild geese. I know that's a different period in history, but you do get this, and there's a wonderful sense even within the music of that Shannos kind of the old queen in our own tradition. I'm sure
it is very much of a king. Yes, this is it.
I'm sure you could hear that aspect in there too, Mary.
Well, certainly today, Salog brought that forward very much in the rehearsals. She was singing a famine song, Johnny Shoiga. And again, it's this, you know, the families are being evicted. They're out on the road. This is heading one direction and it's not good. So there's this incredible, sorrow and sadness in the music. But there's also, I think, the telling of a story about these powerful women and what they did and how much they served the causes and for everybody.
Just one final thing as we finish up then, Mary. Obviously, Countess Marshkevich has her critics, and I'm sure you're aware of that in the writing of the Freedom Letters. How did you handle that side of things and sometimes those criticisms that are given to her, particularly in and around her class as much as anything else?
Yes, absolutely. I, you know, she had sworn enemies even in the time, and certainly afterwards, people piled on, you know, all sorts of layers after her death and in the decades that followed. But if I just remember Sean O'Casey, who really couldn't stand her, but I could understand as well why, because she would probably sweep into a room, you know, and interrupt everyone and everything and sort of take over. I'd say she did have that kind of energy. And, you know, the people are like, where is this one coming from? And maybe she was there in the ball gown from Dublin Castle. And it's like, what is happening here? She's not one of us. Who is she really? But even he said she had tremendous energy and she was fearless.
Well, so listen,
there was that grudging admiration. And I think she proved herself
in time
to thousands and thousands of Dublin people who lined out for her funeral. At the end of her life.
Well, it does sound like a fascinating project. It's called Freedom Letters. It takes place at 8 p.m. This Friday, the 7th of July, at the Model in Sligo as part of the Carja Arts Festival. You'll get full details on carjafestival.com. And I think it is a lovely thing that you're doing, Alessa, here to dedicate the performance to your friend Victoria Amelina, and our sympathies to you and obviously to her family and friends. She was buried today, and thank you so much for coming speaking to us at such a difficult time. Go Ramah Gutfein. Thank you very much to Alessa, and thank you to Mary in Sligo as well.